Well, good evening. Certainly good to see everyone here tonight. I want to extend my appreciation for the invitation to be able to come here and speak to you. So I'm thankful to be here. Jessica and I love this congregation and all the people here. And so we're just thankful to be here, and I'm glad that you invited me. I'd like to look at a lesson tonight called Be on the Alert, Watching for the King. Be on the alert, watching for the King. This is actually a lesson that I preached in Florida, and Paul and Kathy heard it there. I asked them if I could repeat the lesson. Paul said I could. My poor wife didn't get the same question. She has to hear these sermons over and over again. But we're going to be looking at Matthew 24. And there's really a set of parables there that's a cluster of parables. And I've called these the readiness parables because one of the main themes or message that we find within these parables is be ready. Be on the alert. And so before we get into those, I want to really provide some context. The context for these parables, which occur at the end of 24 and the beginning of 25, and I'll tell you what those parables are. It's the parable of the faithful and the rebellious servant. It's the parable of the five foolish and the five wise virgins or maidens. And also the parable of the talents. So many of those are well known, but we're going to look at the message that we find from these parables. The context actually begins in Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and 25 is a discourse of Jesus to his disciples. And Matthew is filled with five different discourses, and this is the last one that we find in the book. This is not his final message, but it's one of the final times we find in Matthew that he is able to speak to his disciples in such an extended way. In fact, as we head into chapter 26 and 27, we see there the institution of the Lord's Supper, and we find the betrayal of Jesus, and then he is led to the crucifixion. So this is one of the last messages that we find there. In Matthew 24, and notice in the first few verses, and a parallel is found in Mark 13 where they simply ask this question. Look, teacher, what wonderful stones and what wonderful buildings. Now, in Matthew 24 and 25, this is the Olivet Discourse. And maybe I rushed over this picture too quickly. Jesus would have been standing across the Kidron Valley as he looked upon the city of Jerusalem and the temple. And that's when he gives this discourse. Okay? So we find in Matthew in the very beginning, and a parallel in Mark 13 and verse 1, it says, the disciples ask this question or make this statement. Look, teacher, what wonderful stones and what wonderful buildings. They were noticing the temple that was there, and they said, look how awesome and majestic these things are. They boggle the mind. Josephus describes the massive marble stones that provided the foundation for the temple as white and strong. White and strong. And they measured 12 feet high by 18 feet wide. They were about the size of a semi-truck. So that's how massive these stones were. And so it makes sense that the disciples would say, look at this building. Look how majestic these stones are. The letter to Aristeus describes the temple as so strong that no one could force his way into the precincts. This was an amazing building. Well, in Matthew 24 and verse 2, Jesus says this. You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. That's even more amazing when we consider the size of these stones. Jesus says, there's not one stone that's left here. And these are not little brick stones, right? These massive stones, not one stone will be left upon another. Jesus says, destruction is imminent. Destruction is imminent. Well, to introduce that theme of imminent destruction, I'd like to introduce you to somebody. And you may already know who this is. This is John Douthat. John Douthat. Now, this is Paul's father, my wife's grandfather. And he was a pilot in the Air Force. And he flew from 1950 to 1972. Now, if you know anything about your American history, you know that those were very important years for our country. This was coming right out of World War II as we were heading into the Cold War. And so Russia and the United States, now they never fought a war together during the Cold War, but it seems like many of the conflicts that happened throughout the world were a result of that conflict there. And so you might imagine Korea was really a fight over communism and the spread, and the same thing for Vietnam. And Russia and the United States were behind both of those. And so we see that John Douthat was flying during this time. So even though no war was fought between Russia and the United States, you may know that there was increased tension, because each side was trying to build more and bigger and better bombs. In fact, it was the atomic bomb that ended World War II. And so after that was made, there was a race that was on between these two superpowers. And they began to build more and bigger and better bombs, with the threat that they would launch against the other one. There was the threat of the war that would truly end all wars, as it might even annihilate the world's population if it was to get going. So John Douthat flew during that time. One of the... before I get to this, let me go back to this picture. One of the missions that he flew was called Operation Chrome Dome. Operation Chrome Dome. And so that was when the airplanes were up in the air on a constant rotation. And so you would go up in the air, and there would be another one that would leave after a few more hours and another. And so we were always up in the air, and there were three different zones that we were going toward. Okay? Toward Alaska, toward Greenland. There was another one that went even further east. And so why do you think that they were continually up in the air like that? They were ready at a moment's notice. If they needed to be at war, they were already halfway there or over Russia, ready to drop bombs. And so John Douthat lived in a state of constant alert during this time. In fact, within 15 minutes, he had to be ready, once he got an alarm, to be ready and up in the air. And so he was alert and ready, because there was this imminent destruction, right? There was this thought that the world could be at war. We could be at war with Russia. Well, this really came to a head during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. And some of you may remember that. It's one thing to have Russia way over there say that they have bombs. It's quite another for Cuba to be an ally of Russia and to have bombs. Why is that? Well, they are right there beside us, aren't they? Right there beside us. And so their reach to all the cities of the United States was very close. Very close. And so this was October of 1962. In October of 1962, my mom was a 12-year-old girl, and she was living in Belgrade, Florida. Belgrade, Florida, right above the Everglades. So she was in South Florida near Lake Okeechobee. And they were running drills, the drills that would happen in their schools. And so they would have to duck and get under the desk, get in the hallway, and hide in case, you know, the alarm sounded that the bombs were coming. John Douthat, as I mentioned, lived in a state of constant readiness during this crisis. And he lived on the base, and he was prepared to be up in the air, again, with only 15 minutes notice. He had to be ready and prepared. Now, one thing you'll notice about the nation during this time, or really two things, that is that this threat of imminent destruction led to two very important things. Be on the alert and be prepared. There's this threat of imminent destruction, and you need to be on the alert and be prepared. Well, the reason I took this long, extended time to talk about John Douthat is I think that relates to what we find in Matthew 24. Jesus is telling the disciples that not one of these gigantic stones are going to be left upon another. And so you need to be on the alert And you need to be prepared. Be on the alert and be prepared. Well, as we go to Matthew 24, and let's notice some things that we find in this text. In Matthew 24 and verse 3, now that the first couple of verses are found as Jesus is walking past the temple. And so I think he gets an eye view, and it's as they get out later that the disciples ask this question, and they say, "When will these things happen?" This is verse 3. "And what will be the sign of your coming in judgment and of the end of the age?" They seem in my mind to conflate or combine the destruction of Jerusalem with the end of the age. And that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because it would be unimaginable for them to think that the temple would be destroyed. If that's going to happen, remember those massive stones the size of semi-trucks? If that's going to happen, then it must be the end of the age. It must be the end of the world. So when will these things happen, and what will be the sign? And what will be the sign? Well, notice that Jesus responds, and he responds by talking about two different judgments. I think they probably had one in mind, and there's some debate about that. But Jesus responds by talking about two different judgments. The destruction of Jerusalem, and that's found in Matthew 24, verses 4 through 35. And then he transitions to the final judgment in 24:36 through 25:46. But notice, and there's really a lot we could say about this passage, but notice there is one very important distinguishing factor how we can tell that these are two different judgments that he's talking about. And that is the presence of signs. Of signs. Now, for the destruction of Jerusalem, it would be accompanied by discernible signs. And so you would be able to see wars, rumors of wars, tribulation, false prophets, false messiahs. You could see those and understand and know that the end is near for Jerusalem. That is coming. There are signs you could see and observe. But as he transitions to the final judgment, there will be no signs. You will not know that day and that hour. And so you must be alert and prepared. So let's notice these transitions. In Matthew 24 and verse 33. Now this is the end, the very final part of the destruction of Jerusalem. He says this. "So also when you see all these things, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." So do you see the point with the destruction of Jerusalem? There will be signs. You'll be able to see and know. And it will not. This generation will not pass until these things take place. Now as we transition to the final judgment in verse 36, notice how he starts that passage. There he says, "But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only." No one knows. You do not know the day and the hour. Now, Matthew 24, I will grant you, is a difficult passage. And one of the reasons for that is that these two, you know, I've laid them out very clearly, these two distinct judgments, the themes actually bleed into one another. And so this idea of being alert and be prepared, that's found in the first part. And it's also found in the second part. You see other things like the coming of the Son of Man. You might associate that with the final judgment, but that's also used to describe Jesus and the coming of destruction on Jerusalem. And there's also this need for alertness. So we see that they do bleed in, and that can make it difficult, right, as we try to discern these differences. But I found that idea of the signs is what was most helpful for me in discerning between the two judgments. Okay? And that also plays a part in the parables that we're going to talk about. Because he is going to hammer that theme over and over again. You don't know the day and the hour when the Master will return. Okay. So, that does lead us into these readiness parables. 24:45 through 25:30, and on either side are statements of the final judgment. So this last section is framed by statements of the final judgment. First of all, in 24:36 through 44, there is an unknown return. And Jesus points to the days of Noah as an analogy for his return. And he concludes with a clear exhortation. Notice verse 42. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. Do you see the point? Be alert, be ready at all times, because you don't know the day when your Lord is coming. And again, in verse 44, therefore you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Do you see the point that's being made? Stay awake and be ready. Be on the alert. Be prepared. And so we see that with the theme that is being developed here. That's going to lead us into the readiness parables and then that final judgment scene at the end. Okay? So when we look at these three parables, often there's what we call a parable cluster. And it's almost like they're three different parables, but they're making the same message, or they're saying the same thing. And so they're clustered together. And so we might notice that that's what's happened here with these readiness parables. They're going to make the same point in slightly different ways. And so as they make that same point, they share a lot of the same common features. First of all, when it comes to characters. And this is common with many parables, but there's what we call a triad there. There's three characters that are kind of the main ones in the text. There's a master, or an authority figure. There's a good servant, and there's a bad servant. Okay, and that's common in many parables, but especially in these three, we see those characters here, or groups of characters. Okay, there's also a master. Now, this master is going to depart or be away, and he's going to come back at an unexpected time. An unexpected time in each one of these parables. We find that there are also servants. And these servants are given tasks to do. They have responsibilities. And what's going to distinguish the good servant from the bad servant is whether they do their job. Whether they do what they are supposed to do. And we also see that there are consequences. When the master comes back, he will reward the righteous and he will punish the foolish. He will punish the foolish. And so that's found in all of these parables. Okay? So with that said, I'd like to read the text. That's a little bit of a build-up, but I want to read through all these parables and then I'm going to talk a little bit about each one. Okay? So I'm going to start in Matthew 24 and verse 45. Matthew 24, 45, and I'm going to read through 25, 30. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Chapter 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. Chapter 25 and verse 14. For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away, he who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had made the 2 talents, he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. But his master answered him, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, with that in mind, the first parable we find is the parable of the wise and foolish servant. And I'm not going to talk about the parallel passages, but there are 2 parallel accounts with this parable in Matthew 13, 32 through 37. And it's slightly different there. One that's an attendant at the door that's watching and waiting. We also see this in Luke 12, 41 through 48. So what we see with this parable is that there is a wise and there is a foolish servant or a faithful servant. And we find that in the first verse, there in 24, verse 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant? Now you notice as soon as it asks that question, the answer is going to come right after that in verse 46. Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Who is the faithful and wise servant? It's simply this, the one doing his job. Not some extraordinary feat. There's not even a mention of one going above and beyond, but the one who faithfully and consistently carries out his task. And what task did this man have? Well, he was likely a very important servant. It says that he was set over his household to give them food at the proper time. So he was the servant over all the other servants. So this man was in charge of all that this man had as far as giving them the food and making sure that they had the provisions that they needed. Who's the wise and faithful servant? The one that did his job. The one that did his job. The evil servant, though, and it's interesting in this passage, the evil servant may be the very same one that was the good servant. So what's the difference? Well, notice what he says in verse 48. But if that wicked servant says to himself, My master is delayed. So if he changes in his mind what he says about the master's return, he may take a different course of action. And notice what it says. It says, If he says to himself, My master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and in an hour he does not know. Notice the psychology of one that says, My master's not coming back. Did you ever do that with your parents? Parents are away, they're out of the house. when you were younger and you said, oh, I've got the run of the place. I can do what I want. Well, that works for a little time, doesn't it? Until they come back and find you in whatever trouble that you decided to get into. And they bring you to account. Well, so it is for this man. But notice that this man is completely rebellious in his activity. In fact, he does the very opposite of what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to care for the servants, isn't he? Instead, he beats them. He's supposed to give the provisions to the servants. But what does he do? He gets drunk and he gorges himself. He takes all of that for himself and he neglects his duty, his service. Well, the text says that the master will return. And he will return in a day when he does not expect him, in an hour he does not know. Remember the theme we've been establishing. Jesus will come, the Master will come, in a day and an hour you do not expect. And so we see that he is called into account. And the text says that he is cut in pieces and he is cast where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What a horrible end for this foolish servant. Well, let's notice the next parable, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. And we hear virgins sometimes. These are maidens. We might even think of bridesmaids or wedding attendants. These were their girls or women that had accompanied the one that was about to be married. Okay? So we find there that there are two types. Right? Foolish and wise. And we set that pretty quickly in the text. It says in 25:1, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. Now, what's the distinguishing factor here? The distinguishing factor is the wise were ready for the return of the groom. And the foolish were not ready. We're ready for what? Well, as we look at this parable, it's helpful to understand the background or the Jewish custom when it came to weddings. A wedding really consisted of two parts in among the Jews. There was the part that happened during the day, and this would have been a time when the families gathered and celebrated. They would have had dancing. There would have been food and meals. They would have exchanged blessings with one another and promises, very similar to the vows that we make today. And so that would have been a time of great happiness and celebration for both families as they were there celebrating. But there was a second part to the wedding for the Jews, and that was the feast that took place at the groom's house. And so they would transition places and go to the groom's house, and there would be a feast. And the highlight of the transition there was the festal procession, a procession of lights. And so they would accompany, the attendants would accompany the bride and the groom with torches lit. And they would accompany them there to the groom's house. Wouldn't that have been a beautiful sight to see? And so that's really what happened. What appears to happen here is that the bridesmaids have come back with the bride to the groom's house and they are waiting for the groom. And that also would have been a common practice. Often the groom stayed behind with the bride's parents and they would negotiate the dowry. And there would, sometimes it would be drawn out and they would, as they went through these negotiations. And so it had not been uncommon for that negotiation to be delayed. Well, as we go back to the groom's house, they are waiting for the groom to come back. Okay? And he's taking a long time, isn't he? And so what happens to these bridesmaids? Well, they get drowsy. It's been a big day. They've had a long day. And they get drowsy. And they are waiting. But the call comes out. The bridegroom is here. And all of a sudden, for some, there's excitement as they are ready for that. And there are others, there's a panic. They don't have enough oil because the groom has taken so long. They don't have enough oil. And so they say to the wise, give us some of your oil. And they say, wait, that's not going to work. There's not going to be enough for you and us. You need to go and buy some. And as they go and buy some, the groom returns and they go into that feast, the wedding feast. And they shut the door. Those that are ready enter in with the groom and they enjoy the celebration. But those that were not ready, they are shut out. They are shut out and they are not allowed to enter. And the Lord, and they're going to even say and knock on the door, open to us. And the master will say, I do not know you. Reminds me of what's said in Matthew 7 there, beginning with that final judgment scene, when many people say, you know, won't we be there with you? Didn't we do many signs and many things in your name? And Jesus says, depart from me, I never knew you. Now notice how it concludes. Watch therefore, and I'm in verse 13, for you know neither the day nor the hour. Do you see the theme? Watch, be on the alert. Well, we also see the final parable here, the parable of the talents, the parable of the talents. Now, like the first parable, this final parable involves a master who departs on a long journey and leaves his servants behind with responsibilities. This time, though, it's not a servant over other servants giving them food, but rather he entrusts them with his wealth. Okay? He gives them the talents there. A talent is a measurement of money. It's not an ability or something like that. But this was a monetary value, an amount of money. And it was a very large amount of money. In fact, one talent was worth 20 years of wages for a day laborer. So you're talking about kind of like what we might think of a retirement nest egg. This was a big amount of money. And he leaves and he gives one man five, one man two, and one a single talent. And he says to watch over my affairs, watch over this money. And he expects them to use this money wisely. Well, the text says that the first servant, he immediately, I love that word there, he immediately gets to work. There's no time to waste. And he goes and he makes five more talents. And the second one does likewise. He gets right to work, okay? And he makes two more talents. But the third servant, he does not get to work right away. In fact, he's fearful. And he hides his talent in the sand. And he reasons with himself, well, at least I'm not losing money. I'm not doing anything that's going to jeopardize what he gave me. Now, I may not make anything, but I'm not going to lose anything. Well, the master comes back, and notice it says the master returns after a long time. They were not able to predict when he came or expect it, but it was after a long time. So just as these servants had gotten to work, they also come before the master and present before him. The first one steps forward. He seems to be the go-getter of the crowd, doesn't he? He went immediately to work, and now as the master comes back, he steps forward and says, here's your five talents and five more. And the master says to him, good job. Well done, faithful servant. Enter into my joy, the joy of the master. And so we see the blessing that was given to him. The second one does the same. But the third one doesn't step forward with a presentation, but with excuses. He says, I knew you to be a hard man. I didn't want to lose anything. And the master tells him that he is not pleased with him. And he says to take away what he has. And he's very upset. In fact, he uses these words in verse 26. You wicked and slothful servants. And so he takes from him the one talent that he had. He gives that elsewhere. And to that man, we find that he is cast out. The others enjoy the presence of their master, but this man is cast out. So those are the parables, and I think they fit nicely in that context as they tell us, be alert and be ready. Well, let me conclude with some lessons that we can learn from this text. First of all, be watchful and alert. Be watchful and alert. And unless I didn't connect these dots quite so clearly as I need to, the point of all of this is that Jesus is the master, and he will return. Okay? Jesus is the master and he will come again. He will return. So in light of that, what do we need to do? Well, first of all, we need to be watchful and alert. As Christians, we can never lose sight of the master's return. Five times in our text, Jesus echoes the refrain that the day and the hour of His return can neither be known nor expected. We cannot predict the time of His return. You know, there are many people that have tried to predict His return. Jesus is coming on May 13th, 20 whatever, 19, 18 whatever, and they predicted the time. Did any of those come true? No, in fact, that caused a lot of harm as people put their hopes into this return and then they become disillusioned and say, well, maybe He's never coming back. I thought it was right here. And so there can be a lot of problems with that. I think most of us have learned that we cannot predict that. And so we don't try to make those kind of predictions. But I think we stand to a danger that happens on the other side of things. We're not trying to predict, but maybe it is that we dismiss His return or we forget about His return. And that can be very easy to do. We're busy, aren't we? We've got things to do. And so my mind is focused on, well, I've got to get to the cleaners. I've got to get this grocery shopping done. I've got this thing to do to the house. These kids got to go here. And we get filled, don't we, with the things of this life. And we can lose sight of what is most important, that the Master will come again. And I want you to notice that this becomes even more dangerous with the passing of time. You know, it's been 2,000 years since Jesus spoke these words. Jesus said that He would come again. And as time passes, you know, we might have, as it's soon to that time, we might expect it. But as time passes, we'll say, well, maybe it's not going to happen. That's what they said in 2 Peter chapter 3 when they looked at God coming back and returning. He hasn't come yet. Therefore, they conclude, therefore, He's not coming. But that was a fault in their logic. The text tells us that Jesus or this Master will come back after a long time. After a long time. But yet He is still coming back. We need to understand that even though it's been a long time, that doesn't negate or take away the promise that Jesus will come again. So let us be vigilant and watchful. Let us have the excited anticipation of the wedding attendants as they were looking forward to the return of the Master. And let us echo the words of Paul in 1 Corinthians 16:22, Maranatha, which means come, Lord Jesus. Let us have that kind of attitude. Next, we need to be faithful in service. To be faithful in service. The readiness parables promote faithful service with good and bad examples. First of all, consider the ways that the characters were unfaithful. In the first account, there was one that was insubordinate. He completely did the opposite of what he was supposed to do. And as Christians, we can fall into that trap, can't we? We are to put sin away from us. We've been baptized into Christ. We've been washed of our sins. And we're to put sin away so that we can be in fellowship with God. But sometimes we begin to think, maybe the Master's not coming. Maybe there's no point to this. And I'm going to live it up in sin. And we simply live in insubordination. That is a danger that we need to avoid. Sin is harmful and it can destroy and kill us. Well, the second way that we find of unfaithful servant is found with the parable of the foolish and wise maidens. The unfaithful maidens are not insubordinate, but they are rather inattentive. Inattentive. They're simply not paying attention. And as I mentioned before, we can get so busy with our activities that we look like them, don't we? Got things to do. I'm just not paying attention to what I should. And we can become inattentive. And that can be a problem. The third example, in the parable of the talents, the unfaithful servant is inactive. Inactive. And that can be a problem for Christians today as well. We say that, I put my time in or I've done whatever I need to do. I can take it easy from here. This work is just too much trouble. Or maybe we might be discouraged. It's not going to do any good to do the work of the Lord. I don't see any results. And so why should I do those things? And we become inactive. That can be a danger for us. In fact, if we fall into any of those categories, we are unfaithful servants. On the other side of things, the faithful servants are those that practice consistent, faithful service day in and day out. That should describe a Christian. Consistent, faithful service. The wise maidens exhibited foresight and they made preparations accordingly. Faithful Christians need to do the same, looking to the coming of the return of Christ, having a long-term vision and not a short-sighted vision. And then we see the wise servants of the talents. They acted immediately, decisively, and eagerly. Okay? They got to work. They got busy. And that is a picture of wise service and faithful service. And then finally, be motivated. These parables give us motivation by looking at the consequences of what happens. They provide vivid picture of what awaits both the wise and the unwise servants. The wicked servants meet a horrifying end in these parables. They are cast from the Master's presence in a place of outer darkness and the weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is a picture that is described elsewhere that describes hell. And what is the worst part of all of this is where I started. It is away from the Master's presence. It is away from God. It is the absence of God. And so this is the place that is so horrifying. But the faithful steward is welcomed into his master's company. You notice this with the parable of the virgins there. The wise maidens join the wedding feast with the bridegroom. We also see the resourceful students with the talents. They are told, well done, good and faithful servants. Enter into the joy of your master. Come and be with me. And that is the true joy that is given to faithful servants. And so we see a wonderful message here from these parables. And the message is, be on the alert and be ready, for the Master is coming. That's the lesson tonight. It may be that you're not a servant at all of God. You're not a child of God. Well, you can become one by believing the gospel message, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus as the Christ, and being baptized in the water for forgiveness of sins. If you're here and you are a Christian, maybe you've become inattentive or inactive or insubordinate, and you're not living as you should and honoring your commitment. Well, you also need to make changes. If there's any subject to the invitation, please come as we stand and sing at this time.